The Sweet Revenge of Fanny Peculiar by Bernadette Russell. This is the story of Fanny Peculiar. Every family has at least one dirty secret, and she is theirs, the Pompidou's. Henriette and Justine Pompidou hastily fled revolutionary France, disguised as a bundle of turnips. To escape the clutches of Madame Guillotine, they were smuggled on board a steamboat bound for America in a case of dirty gentlemen's undergarments, some still smeared with merde. Upon arriving in America, despite being slick with fecal matter and half dead from lack of food, Henriette announced that he was French aristocracy, bien sûr, and would very much like to meet the King of America, whereupon he felt he was sure to be welcomed into the royal household. Once informed by a shipmate that the land of the free did not have, never had, and never would have a royal family, you imbecile. His next question was, well, how does one make money around here?
Show business, replied the stevedore.
That's the way to get rich, Froggy. Show business. Like most aristocrats, the Pompidous were fond of dressing up, playing make-believe and being the centre of attention. They'd never had proper jobs in their lives, so in many ways were very well suited to enter show business. Henriette himself had no talent, and due to generations of first cousin inbreeding, had a formidable overbite, which meant he was no Romeo. His wife, Justine, who, unbeknownst to him, happened to be his half-sister, rather despaired at how they would flourish on the stage. When she fell pregnant after only 7 days in a mouldy hovel in Manhattan, her condition a result of a week of chilly winter weather in a narrow bed. The plans to tread the boards were put on hold while she remained in her delicate condition, and they just about made enough money to keep them in bread and cheese. Justine washed the dirty clothes of their nouveau riche neighbours, and Henriette taught the sons of wealthy merchants how to fence. And for the first time, Henriette and Justine experienced being looked down upon, being despised by the rich. Needless to say, they didn't like it. They took a petty revenge by teaching the New Worlders nonsensical French expressions. Vous êtes le chou-fleur horrible. Mon os est plus joli de votre os. Fuck off. Wanker. Au revoir. It was fun. But it wasn't enough. Arriving 3 months early, in a terrible rush, their darling son Jacques Robespierre was born. He measured 6 inches long and he weighed little more than a bag of sugar. He never grew higher than 3 feet 4, and after his birth, Justine began to sprout thick black face and chest hairs, which she welcomed in the frost of a New York April. Poor Henriette, 16th in line to the French throne, all his family chopped off at the neck, found himself reduced to living in squalor with a bearded lady wife and a midget son.
Show business. That's the way to get rich.
If any of you, dear listeners, work in show business, then you'll know the stage provides a home for all kinds of freaks, although most are just freaks on the inside. It provides a good living if you're willing to sell what makes you different, whether that is exceptional beauty, extraordinary abilities, or unusual attributes. Having no talent whatsoever to speak of, but appearances that made people stare, the family made the astute decision to at least get paid when people gawped. Henriette, though exceptionally ugly, did not count as a freak in the way his bearded wife and midget son did, so he developed a strongman act, and they became a novelty family turn. Billed as
the most peculiarest family in the whole wide world,
and displayed against a backdrop of idyllic pastoral life, they posed as what they were, elegant European royals down on their luck, and they made a fortune, especially when the bearded Madame Justine offered extras, up the derriere knee tremblers at the stage of the theatre with men who thought that they might like to kiss someone with a beard, but weren't sure. She adopted the American love of profit as her own, and she grimly sold her each and every orifice nightly, and squirreled away money and bitterness. And she groomed her beard carefully each morning, knowing full well that without it she was nothing. Her midget child Jacques Robespierre had his own small son called Caleb. Caleb begat Xavier, who begat Walter, who begat Edward, etc., etc., and the family prospered. By the 1930s, the Pompidous boasted a descendant whose claim to fame was playing a monstrous bird in a Tarzan movie. The Depression era was the only time in the history of the world that the so-called freaks triumphed, grew rich, prospered.
Everybody wanted to see someone they thought of as worse off than themselves, and they paid handsomely to do so. The Pompadours kept up the family tradition of marrying each other until the family XXs and XYs were a veritable mitochondrial alphabet soup. Later additions included Racy Lacey, whose combination of contortionist double-jointedness and nymphomania won her a sizable fan base in the adult film market, Twitchy Titchy, the infamous trigger-happy East Coast gangster whose diminutive demeanour belied his formidable skill in karate, and Big Pussy, who was born with a miniature tail and chose to have herself tattooed in tiger stripes. A colourful family, but a family fallen from grace, never again to be accepted back into the upper echelons of society, despite their best efforts, despite proving aristocratic descent. It was dismissed. It couldn't be that such a strange and amoral family could be part of European royalty. They seemed more suited to the Jerry Springer show. And each generation burned with the injustice. For over 200 years, every single new member of the family was fed bile and hatred towards the ruling classes with their mother's milk. Even in America, where you can have prince as a name but never as a title, there they were, the ones that inherited power and privilege, smirking from their offices in the White House. The Pompadours, despite money and fame, could never get there. They were too funny-looking, embarrassing, godless, unconventional. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, became the family motto. And then came Fanny Peculiar, the heroine of this story, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Henriet and Justine Pompadour. Each newborn to the family was greeted with interest. How would this one turn out? Would she have six fingers on each hand like great-aunt Brittany? Would she grow to 10 feet tall like cousin Schuyler? Would she have an enormous clitoris like Uncle Brian? Can the family profit from her peculiarities? But no. This one was different. She was born with the misfortune of being utterly beautiful in the most conventional sense. In the Pompadour family, this was openly despised. They named her Frances, which she shortened as soon as she could say it. "I prefer Fanny," she declared, with a twinkle. She chose Peculiar as a surname for her own reasons. So there it was. She was Fanny Peculiar. Although outwardly exquisite, she grew up to be utterly repulsive inside, and proud of it. And she learned to cook. Fanny opened a shop in the East Village, a chocolatière. The interior was all 19th century opium den, but the ingredients of her delicacies timeless. Crunchy hazelnut Florentines, apricot and lavender entremont, raspberry and white chocolate caskets, chestnut and chilli tarts, lip-smackingly delicious. The ingredients of her treats were so mouth-wateringly sumptuous everyone desired them. She created bespoke chocolates for Prince Charles, Sarah Palin and the Pope. The prices were so eye-wateringly high only the rich could afford them. Entry to the shop was by invitation only. Only the extremely privileged ate her chocolates, and after 200 years, Fanny avenged her ancestors for every single one of her truffles, her pralines, her ganache-filled handmade cocoa roses had a secret unlisted ingredient. Every item was laced with her own shit. And as she herself ate only Big Macs and drank only Jack Daniels and Pepsi, her shit was, well, it was disgusting, greenish, lumpy. "Bon appétit!" Fanny cried as Mitt Romney bid greedily down on a dark chocolate mousse, groaning with pleasure. The walls lined with the portraits of her ancestors rang with laughter. "Plenty more where that came from, Cherie." The end.